Hello and welcome back to the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. As usual, we've got our very own Simon Ferry sitting across me. Si, how you doing?
Good, mate. Just been battering the neighbours' windies with snowballs, so Paulus will be at my door when I get him.
And top of the league as well?
Top of the league, but I've done money.
That's why they're top of the league.
What happened?
I had to come off with 10 minutes to go. Fucking travesty for the fool of Peterhead. They're in mourning today. But doesn't look good, man. I think I've tore something in my knee, so...
So what are you looking at? Rest of the
four
season?
3 or 4 weeks, maybe. Three or four weeks.
Well, that's not too bad. Come back just for the run-in, just
but
at
the thing
nice
is,
time.
The win bonus goes up when you're top of the league, and I'm going to fucking
does
miss
it.
Uh-huh.
You've surely got to be on it. You don't get
nah,
that in
I'm
your deal.
Get it, nah. The boys will meet in Arsenal.
You'd have thought, with your injury record, you'd have had that, the first thing you'd have written in. Right, listen, look to your right-hand side. This is an open goal. This is an open goal. Scoop, this is an open goal exclusive. You've knocked it off. 1-year-old Portsmouth teammates, he's been desperate to get on the podcast for months and months. He's been badgering you.
He has.
And eventually you've relented. You've got him lined up. He's in beside us. He's a top man. He's a Motherwell goalkeeper. Trevor Carson. Trevor, great to have you on, yeah, on the Open Goal podcast.
Yeah, no, it's great to be on. I'm a big fan. I listen to all the shows and I'm a bit starstruck, to be honest, sat beside Simon. And no, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
When you sat next to him at Portsmouth and he was a teammate, did you think he was destined for something like this?
Not well, he could always talk the talk, like, but no, he's doing great. And you know, Si was always in the treatment room when I was there, so I didn't sit next to him much, but you know, he's doing great. And
by the way,
it's good to see.
Trevor's going to punch my head off on Christmas Day once.
Aye.
Remember that?
I can't remember. Sounds a bit right.
I was taking the piss at somebody and I just remember you staring at us and I was like, oh fuck man, you're like me and you outside. I'm sort of shitting myself walking out.
Nah, that's why I don't
blame him, he's
often
a big lad.
Oh, he's a big boy, mate. He is.
But tell us, first of all, before we get any further, Trevor, you had a hell scare, a serious one, late last year. You obviously know back playing football, but the most important thing is you're back to full health. Just tell us about it and what exactly you had to go through, because obviously it was worrying times for yourself and your family.
Yeah, you know, it's obviously 2 months on now and I feel a lot better, but at the time it was scary. And you know, it all started when we played Rangers at Ibrox. We got beat 7-1, but the morning of the game I woke up with like weird pains down my shoulder, and I just thought I've had shoulder problems all my career. I just thought it was just I'd slept on it wrong or something, and
or someone else. How you been doing something?
Doing something. But the week after that, I went away with Northern Ireland and was still getting pains. It was going into my neck, down into my ribs, and you know, I just didn't know what it was. But I got wind that I was going to play against Austria, and you know, at Windsor Park. So I thought, you know, I'm going to blag this, and so you know, it's too good of an opportunity to. So I played in the game, come back to Motherwell on the Monday, and it was the Tuesday night. I was just lying on the sofa and I genuinely thought I was taking a heart attack. The pains were like, my mum was there at the time, and it's like a mother's instinct. She knew something was up and she was badgering me to go to A&E, and finally I relented and went in, and you know, they done tests and found like a clot that started off my shoulder, but it sort of broke off and into my lung. So you know, I was really lucky that, you know, when you hear stuff that the doctor said, like they were 90% convinced it was cancer when in the first scan, you know, stuff like that sort of hits home. And
they're telling you that
that was after the new, that's after the new, it was just, I say just a clot, but after the new it was a clot and it wasn't anything, you know, more sinister than that. You know, they told me what they thought it was, and because I got on really well with the doctor. He was quite a flamboyant guy. He was a big Celtic fan, you know, and he was sort of good crack. But you know, when you hear stuff like that, you know, football becomes irrelevant. You know, it's your family, your health, you know, and ever since then, that's all I've been focusing on, getting back healthy.
It was a blood clot.
A blood clot, yeah. They still don't know. I'm going to a specialist next week because Motherwell want to get to the bottom of why it's came. And, you know, usually you see blood clots in older people and, you know, overweight people. I know I'm carrying a bit, like, but I'm not that bad. But, you know, so they want to get to the bottom of it, and hopefully we can find out, you know, where it came from.
You must just be happy as much as you say you put football in perspective with a situation like that. But it's obviously been very, very close.
Yeah, you know, I always knew there would come a time where, you know, initially the first month, 6 weeks, it was all my health. I was taking it easy, but I'm at the point now where I feel fit, I feel good. Mm-hmm. But I know the earliest I can come back is the 25th of May, the treatment I'm on, it stops. So I can't do any contact sports until then. So, and it's sort of, you know, turn my heart at the minute because I feel good. I'm in the gym.
I wouldn't say that to me. No one else left.
Have you not heard of the fibres? I've got the fibres in it, mate, the old salt and pepper. So, No, but I'm desperate to get back now, and that's a focus, you know, get back. I know this season's a write-off, so the aim's next season, come back as strong as I can.
And just on that, if you're saying 25th of May, Trevor, are you absolutely guaranteed to be allowed back to play, or is it still not 100% certain?
No, there's no guarantees in terms of, you know, I've read people's stories where the clots come back and they had to be on this treatment for life, and when you're on that treatment, because it's a blood thinner, the dangers of getting a head knock or, you know, it could be fatal, so, you know, it's not, but, you know, everyone's confident I'll make a full recovery, so I'm going for a scan tomorrow, that'll be my first scan to sort of see how it's coming along, and I'll know more after that, but, you know, that's the plan, and, you know, worst case, if I don't play again, you know, as long as I'm healthy, you know, I've got two kids, I've got a partner, you know, that's my main focus, but, you know, I'm confident I'll be back.
Are you, as much as you're confident you're back, and we all hope that you make it back, has there been a wee part of you that's drifted and thinking, right, I need to look at possibly putting a plan in place if this doesn't go to plan?
Yeah, without, you know, I've got my B licence in coaching, and I think for a goalkeeper, it's such an easy route to go into, the goalkeeping coaching, you know, it's, you know, and I'd be stupid not to. So I've enrolled on like my goalkeeping A licence in the summer already. I've done that in the past couple of weeks, so, you know, that's always a foot, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I know I'm coming towards the end of it, well, hopefully 5 or 6 years left, but you got to be, you know, focusing on that. You know, it's always going to come to an end at some point. So, yeah, it's sort of been a wake-up call in that sense, mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, hopefully I can be prepared.
Well, listen, mate, we wish you well. We'll speak more in depth, actually, about your career now. We know you're in good health, and hopefully you get the news that you want on May 25th. We'll speak more about your career, your achievements with Motherwell and Northern Ireland, the possibilities of a couple of other big moves that have nearly happened for you in your career, and there's still time for that to happen as well. But before we go any further, we'll speak about the William Hill Scottish Cup review, Simon, since we're on the William Hill podcast, we may as well speak about it. Right, there was a few big ones, but the shock of the round, the story of the round, of the fourth round ties, was definitely Auchinleck Talbot's victory over Ayr United at Beechwood Park on Saturday. Fantastic for the junior team.
Amazing, eh? It's got to be one of the best results in the competition, eh? Junior team beating Ayr, flying high at the top of the championship. We actually watched it. We got up to Peterhead early to watch it at 12:30 on the telly. And all through the game, we were saying, fucking, I would hate to be at Auchinleck today playing against them, because they just looked so up for it. Ayr looked like a team at a short in confidence. I don't think they've won a game in seven. I think if Shanklin's playing, they win the game. I think Ayr had missed at the bottom, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed to me like it was going to be one of the days for Ayr. They were putting a lot of balls in the box, but not really getting on the end of it. And you just thought, if Auchinleck can get a set piece, they could score for it. And that's exactly what happened. But fair play, Auchinleck. I thought they were very well organised.
Yeah.
And it seemed to me like they wanted it more than the Ayr players, which is surprising for an Ian McCall team.
And they certainly know how to win a cup tie, Trevor, because, okay, this is a William Hill Scottish Cup. It's a senior one. But they've won the Junior Cup, you know, several times. That their holders, Tommy Sloan, the manager, has been there for 5 or 6 years, so they certainly know their way around a cup tie.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see much. I was doing that, you know, at the time, yeah. And, but, you know, I caught the interviews after the game, and Ian McCauley, our manager, you know, he said they totally deserved it. You know, it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't, you know, and that can happen in cup games. You know, you can raise your game, you know, and anyone can beat anyone. And, you know, it's a great achievement for them, and, you know, fair play to them.
Now, obviously, Size has been telling us earlier, Trevor, that he's not got it written into his contract that if he's injured, he's on the bonus. So you wouldn't want, if you're an Auchinleck player, you wouldn't be sending Si in as your rep to negotiate the win bonus for this game against Hearts next month at Tynecastle. We believe they were on £400 a man.
See, for the air game, there, it was £400, not lovely. Bad, eh? Uh-huh.
So you've got to be looking at, if the Auchinleck Talbot boys are listening, get at least treble that.
Yeah, definitely, because it's going to be a TV. Every chance it's going to be a TV game, the next one, so, you know, got to fill your bits. So.
They'll not beat Hearts, though.
Well, do you know what? I was there 7 years ago when Hearts played Auchinleck in the Scottish Cup, the same round, and Hearts only won 1-0. The Auchinleck Talbot goalie, who's still there, Leishman, was outstanding that day, and in fact, Auchinleck scored a goal with a couple of minutes to go, an equaliser, and it was disallowed, but it should have stood, because Gordon Pope, who's still there, the goal was onside. So
you're an avid Auchinleck fan, aren't you?
I can't even pronounce it.
What, was it at Tynecastle or Auchinleck?
It was at Tynecastle.
Was it, right?
Aye, it was only 1-0, but I say, at least when they go, Trevor appreciated his performance. It was outstanding that day. And I suppose going to Tynecastle, when you're out against guys like Stevie Naismith and the rest, the goalkeeper might be the most important player on the pitch for them.
Yeah, he's going to have a blinder regardless, but, you know, it's a great draw for him. Tynecastle's great great place to play, and they'll be buzzing for it. And they'll raise their game. They'll probably run further than they've ever run, you know. And you know, it's going to be a great tie to watch, and I'm sure it'll be on the TV. So it'll be a big day for them.
Scottish Cup's big now too. I enjoyed that weekend. I wasn't really looking forward to it, to be honest with you, but watching the highlights and that, I think quite a lot of the lower league teams done really well, so I think the Scottish Cup was great this weekend. I really enjoyed it.
It's the oldest tournament in football.
Brilliant, eh? Because the English FA Cup now is a farce, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all big teams playing their weekend teams, whereas it's great to see Celtic and big teams like that put out their strongest teams, so fair play to them.
And you see it as well, Aberdeen, Sterry having to play again, Dundee, Queen of the South having to play. Alloa was at that game on Saturday. Alloa 2-0 up, St Mirren down to 10 men, but what a comeback by St Mirren as well.
Yeah, brilliant. And I think as well, sorry for the teams outside the Old Firm, it's a massive opportunity to go and, you know, get the final of a cup and play, you know, play at Hampden.
You know about that, mate, didn't you?
Oh, aye, but, you know, down south, you've got, what is it, 20 Premier League teams, you've got your Championship, but up here, you know, when you're in the SPL, you've, you know, there's, what, 12 teams, if, you know, take away the Old Firm, you've got, you know,
Get a decent draw,
you know, a couple of games. That was us last year, a couple of wins, and all of a sudden you're playing at Hampden in the semis. You know, it's a big opportunity even for, you know, SPL teams.
Just on that then, Trevor, you know, Motherwell lost to Ross County at the weekend. How disappointing a result was that?
Yeah, gutted the whole place. You know, it was geared up. It was last year, our season was built on the cup runs, and you know, so the play, you know, it wasn't a happy dressing room after the game. You know, I was in, and the manager was gutted, because as I say, you know, it is such a big opportunity. You win a couple of games, get a couple of decent draws, and, you know, all of a sudden you're playing quarter finals, semi finals, and, you know, so the lads are disappointed, but, you know, big game tomorrow night again. So,
are they the better team today?
Oh, they deserved it. They were really good, yeah. They played well, but they're top of the Championship. There's not much
difference.
Probably, what, four places difference. You know, we knew it was going to be a tough game, but we just didn't turn up, and, you know, they were decent.
Where does that leave Motherwell? Because if you look at the league table, as much as, you know, take anything for granted now, you're probably maybe the only club that's in limbo, as in you don't look in danger of getting down, and you don't look really much like you're going to kind of penetrate, you know, the top five, kind of six spot. So again, that just, I suppose, hammered home the point, like losing the cup one, because that could have kept
your
focus going, you know, from now until April.
But the manager, we had a meeting on Monday, yesterday after the game. You know, I think the manager was weary of that, of sort of the season petering out a bit, but he made it clear that, you know, the second half of the season is massive, not only in terms of this season, but momentum for next season. You know, it's important. And I think at our place there's maybe 14 lads out of contract, so
I see that,
you know, everyone's playing for their futures, and you know, there's,
and every place you finish higher,
it's worth it,
could
money,
be worth 80, 100, 120 grand extra into the budget,
definitely. And so I don't think there's any fear of, like, you know, that sort of creeping in, like lads sort of down in toes. I don't think that'll happen.
I wanted to ask you something. You've played with some great midfielders, especially at Portsmouth, but how good's
except at Portsmouth.
How good's the boy Turnbull?
Davey,
mate, him, mate. Good
player. He's a player, mate. We've been saying it for, and to be fair to the manager, you know, we were saying he should be playing maybe last year, and the manager's maybe played a blinder with him, because now when he put him in, he's just, you know,
it's the right time.
You know, it seems to be the right time. He scored goals and
great technique in that.
Yeah, he's a you know, he's a great player to watch, and, you know, hopefully we can tie him down, because his contract's up, and, you know, there's obviously a lot of interest in him. So, you know, it'd be great if we could keep him, because, you know, for me, he's top player, and he'll, you know.
A good kid as well, good attitude about him.
Great lad, you know, he's sort of, you know, you wouldn't really notice him around the place, just goes about his business. He's not, you know, he's not one of these Billy Big Time, loud.
You getting this?
He sounds slim at Slaney when he was at Motherwell,
didn't he? No, but he's, you know, he's the right sort of, he's got the right mentality to kick on, but I just hope we can get another year or two out of him, and, you know, and then let him go.
When you look at the overall window in the SPFL, Trevor, we've still got another 8 or 9 days left of it, but what did you think of the impact of the guys who made their debuts at the weekend? You know, your Weirs, your Bucks, your Golds, and even the Rangers game was cancelled, but we saw that Davis and Defoe getting the run out against Helsinki
Davis
on Sunday.
Aye, Davos. You know, I think it's he's outstanding. Like, one of the best midfielders I've played with, and, you know, I just think for the league it's fantastic, you know, these sort of players coming again, because maybe 3 or 4 years ago it was sort of, you know, we weren't attracting these sort of names, and, you know, ever since I've come up here, they've started following me. But it's great, you know, and it's good for the league. You know, it's going to be an exciting finish, and, you know, Rangers Celtic, I think, are going to go right to the wire, and, you know, and they've settled in quite quickly. The boy West scored at the weekend. I didn't see him, you know, by all accounts Burke played well, and, you know, it's exciting and it's, you know, can only be good for the league, you know.
On that, you've mentioned that you're laughing about people following you and the Northern Ireland influence, but we do have, particularly in terms of managers, you've got one yourself, Stevie Robinson, mm-hmm. there's Tommy Wright, there's Neil Lennon, there's Oran Kearney, you know, there's so many of them. Is there something going on? Has there been a knock-on effect from, for example, like Northern Ireland qualifying for Euro 2016, the Michael O'Neill impact? Has that had a wee effect, do you think?
Yeah, you know, obviously Michael still lives in Edinburgh, and he's a well-respected guy, you know, and I'm sure he's recommended these sort of coaches to the, you know, chairman, and because it is Michael O'Neill, they'll probably listen. And, you know, I think they're all doing well as well. You know, Rob has done a great job with us, and Tommy Wright, you know, his record's been excellent, and, you know, Neil Lennon's the top manager, and Oran Kearney, you know, he's struggled at the start, but I think, you know, he's got Jimmy Nick in there, another Northern Irish guy, and, you know, he'll be confident they'll do a good job there. So it's hard to put your finger on why, you know, why they're coming up here, but you know, it's great to see for our country, because, you know, when Michael does eventually move on, you know, these boys getting their ground in here in a good league, a good level, be, you know, Northern Ireland have a few good choices.
In terms of, like you've mentioned Michael, you've obviously worked under him at international level. Just how good is he?
He's the best I've worked under, like, in terms of his detail, attention to detail, and, you know, I always remember reading Roy Keane's book about Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, coming out of a meeting. He never once come out of a meeting where he thought he didn't learn something, or, you know, he doesn't grab your attention. That's the same with Michael O'Neill. Maybe, you know, you could have three meetings in one day, and every one of them you come out thinking, I've learned something there. And, you know, and you always go onto the pitch, you know, for a goalkeeper it's quite easy because you always know your job, but not one player could go on the pitch not knowing exactly what they have to do. Or, you know, he's so, every little detail in the opposition is covered, and, you know, the results over the way he's turned the country around, and the whole field, you know, wins are sold out a year in advance now, and, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago they were struggling to get 5,000-6,000 in the door, so that speaks volumes of the job he's done.
I mean, you've got a hell of a section there. Look, Germany, Holland, I mean, the draw wasn't kind to you at all, was it?
What made it worse was Republic were initially in that group, and they had to take them out because Dublin's one of the host cities, so I think that rubs salt into the wound. But it's, you know, the lads in the group chat after it saying, you know, the way it is, the banter, nice easy draw and all that, but I think deep down they'll be excited, you know, big games. And, you know, I think Holland's a team we have to sort of focus on going head to head with them, the home game against them. We've got to beat them and then hopefully go to, you know, over to, I think it's Feyenoord, we play them over at their ground. So that's a big one, and it's a big challenge, but we're confident we can, you know, get that second place at least.
Okay, just nipping back to the Scottish Cup before we finish off this section of the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground. Trevor, who is your tip? Now that Motherwell's out, should be easier for you to choose one. You look at the last 16, who's your tip to win the William Hill Scottish Cup? Who's going to lift the trophy out there at Hampden on May 25th?
I think on basis of the strength of the squad, you'd have to say Celtic are clear favourites, you know, but I think Rangers will be confident themselves. You know, obviously it's a tough game at Cowden Beef. It's not going to be easy down there. It's going to be a culture shock to a lot of the players. So if they can overcome that, and, you know, in the next round, it's got to be the top two, you know, the Old Firm. But your Aberdeens, your Hearts, you know, Hibs, they'll be confident. Like, you know, I'm sitting on the fence, aren't I? Massively. Just named 5 out of the 16 left.
I'm going to say Celtic. Celtic got to be favourites. That's who my money's on.
You think it's going to be a treble-treble, or do you think Rangers will win the league?
I think it'll go to the wire. I've said there's a lot of big Celtic fans in our dressing room, and I have the banter with them, Cads and all them boys, and I've said I genuinely think Rangers will pip them this year. I do. You know, they've made some amazing signings in this window, and, you know, it seems like there's not a desperation, but just at all costs stop Celtic getting this 10 in a row, and, you know, I think they'll do it this year. I do.
So there you have, we got it. Rangers for the title and Celtic for the William Hill Scottish Cup. Si,
good.
Well done. Who's your tip, Si, for the William Hill Scottish Cup?
I tipped Hearts last week. We've got a very kind draw walking left last eight they'll be in, so mine's just looking good.
Anyway, that's not a bad shout, actually. The old Jambos.
I think because they're not going to challenge Celtic. I think they'll throw their head into that basket.
Yeah,
it's a great phrase there as well.
And as Trevor says, you're only three games away from your final now, you know, and if the draw's kind to you, then you never know what can happen. Okay, brilliant. That's the first part of the podcast over. We're keeping the ball on the ground. It's the Open Goal podcast in association with our friends at William Hill. I'm Mark Guidi and delighted to say joined by our own Simon Ferry, and our special guest is the Motherwell and Northern Ireland goalkeeper Trevor Carson. Great to have Trevor on the show with us. Right, a lot of the headlines the past few days, and it's still rumbling on, particularly down south, is the conduct of the Leeds manager Marco Bielsa, who's admitted to spying on every opponent that he's faced in the championship this season. But it came to a head when Derby, when Frank Lampard spotted a spy and the police had to get involved, and it's kicked off some major stuff down
the
road. What do you make of it?
He's the man. I love him.
He's honest, eh? At least he's honest.
He's the man.
He's honest.
Have you seen the video? Was it done the other day?
No.
On Twitter.
No.
He's like, Zidane, you can come and watch my training sessions, and then after the training I will explain everything to you, okay? Do you understand? And the big Z just like, that's funny. But he doesn't care, does he?
But it goes on so much.
Of course it does, mate.
Especially in international, because see, before an international game you train at the stadium the night before.
Yeah.
So the home team will train first, so the away team will be waiting in the dressing room. So like Austria, I think it was our last away game, then you'll go on when they are finished. But you'll see people up, like Michael's always sending people up to, you know, shoot people off, because it's not allowed, but you still get people pretending to be up in maybe a press room like this, but standing with a video phone, you know, getting watching set plays. And
because your last session is fine for FIFA.
No, he's the one chewing them off. Not us, we don't do it. Not a chance.
Your last session is generally just your kind of set pieces, and it just kind of just...
Aye, set pieces, you know, and you can usually say the day before a game, you know, the way to set the shape up, you know, that's a team that's starting, and, you know... For me, it's just using the initiative to go and get that extra inch in a game, to win a game. And if you get caught, then you've got a lot of explaining to do. But
see, DeCano, he was big on it. He'd done it all the time. He could tell you their team on a Friday.
Yeah.
He says that he hasn't trained all week. He won't play. He says, this will be their team. He's like, I'm top level. He says, I could tell you how many times he's done a shit this week. He used to say that to players. Unbelievable, man. But he used to do that. He definitely had somebody watching thingy, because he knew. And then see, one time his information was wrong. The team came in and the guy, he was like, he won't play. And then he came in, so he was a bit embarrassed, and he started fucking going mental in the dressing room. You've got it wrong, and not going mental on it. But he was big on it, massive on it.
What do you think? I mean, part of me thinks that it's been kicked off for two. It's a foreign coach that started it, and it's come out in the public domain. And B, that the first kind of public victim of it that came to light was Frank Lampard, who is a darling of the
English
eccentric. So you put all that into the basket, you think, you know, Bielsa was going it, whereas I would think, see if it was another foreign coach that was again, I don't think,
or even if it was the other way around.
Yeah, exactly, you know.
It's been definitely blown out, but you know, for me it speaks volumes about what sort of coach he is. He'll go to that length to, you know, get give himself that extra inch in the opposition. So it'll be blown over in a week or two, and he'll be back to doing
See for players though. See, when I played, I couldn't care less who was playing on that team. See,
it's actually worse for me. I actually don't like it when you go in day before a game, watch the opposition. It's usually their best bits. You come out thinking, we're in Barcelona, aren't I? Usually it was Dagenham Redbridge or something we were playing. You come out thinking, they're actually decent. I'd rather just go in blind. But, you know, everyone's different. But, you know, I think it's been blown out of proportion.
But you saw, I don't know if you watched the press conference that he gave last week, you know, when he actually admitted to watching every team, etc., etc. And then he went into the detail of backing up why he does it. And I think per team, if you look at the detail, it kind of amounted to something like one full day, like 24 hours of coverage, of focusing on the one team, just from video analysis and different things. And you think, wow, the staff that he must have and the hours that they must put in to get that detail.
Yeah. See, the physio, I got pally with him. Me and Rafa DeVita got pally with him, and we were speaking to him one day, and they said that they worked 24 hours a day. After training, they would go to his house and he would make them all food. And they would all sit and they would watch just games and games and games up to 10:30 at night. And he said, you'd get up to go to leave, and he'd be like, no, Sid, we have one more game to watch. So it must just be a foreign thing, but workaholics.
It's an obsession, man. Isn't it? Like, some of them are obsessed.
Just to do well in it. Just, like BLC says, if he never done it, he probably, he feels bad if they get beat and he's not done it.
And the question that Trevor wants to ask about that is, no, did the goalie coaches have to do that too? Because Trevor's trying to think, I'm getting away at one, oh, two in the afternoon. The goalie
I'll
coaches
not be working for De Canio anyway, that's for sure.
So do you think it's going to catch, excuse me, do you think it's going to catch, is it here to stay, whether it becomes legitimate or
but
whatever?
See what I'm thinking, how, see the way Derby's training ground is now, there'll be gates and all, how are these guys getting in? What, did they climb the fence or
no,
something?
No, he was behind the fence or something, ahead, yeah, like trees or through. Something, yeah.
Was that right? So there'll be stewards.
It's all right, you wouldn't have any trouble at Motherwell because we train up at DL Park, it's like a...
Yeah.
that's what it is, mate, it's like you see kids running about, like, it's like a PE lesson, mate, so you wouldn't have much trouble up there.
But how much can it actually help? Like, what was it, so they were uh-huh. saying the wee boy Harry Wilson was in the plane. He's our best player, but how much can it actually...
Well, it gives you, it might give you an extra wee bit, but see in the grand scheme of things, at the end of the day, it's about 11 feet. It's about 11 v 11 on the pitch,
isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly.
And you know most of them, unless there's maybe a couple of new signings that have come in that you don't know, you're going to know. Particularly at this stage of the season, it's not his first game against them.
I think Bielsa's kind of trying to shame Lampard a bit. That he's a top manager and this is what a top manager
does. Detail.
And you're moaning about it, but this is what top managers do. Yeah. This is what you should be doing. I think that's what he's saying.
Has it made it even better the fact that he's still going through an interpreter? Does that just add to it? All, you know?
The interpreter's fucking hopeless, isn't he? Yes.
You remember Pochettino? He was at Southampton. Everything, interpreter, interpreter, interpreter. And even though you knew he could speak English, then as soon as he went to Spurs, all of a sudden, that was it.
Fluent English.
Peel, remember Dave Conley at Portsmouth? He was saying to me, he played for Southampton, then he played for Portsmouth, and he loved Pochettino, because he was still pally with Lallana in that face Southampton.
Right.
And Lallana were telling him that Pochettino was brilliant, like a top coach, but he could speak perfect English. And he's saying what he's doing with the interpreter is he's buying himself time. See, if things doesn't work out, he can say to the chairman, look, I'm still no got the language 100%. So it's all smart. They all think it through, didn't they? That's going to be insighting at the top level. Simon Bennett, who knows fuck all at the top level.
I loved the interpreter. We used to do it with the media. You'd interview them like Nakamura, and they'd be like, and they would go into great detail of answering the question in Japanese, and his wee interpreter would say, yes, he is looking forward to the game.
Five words.
The interpreter can't even bother,
yes,
can he?
He has lots of respect for the opposition. I think he's definitely not saying that. He's definitely not saying that. It was so frustrating. But Bielsa, do you want to see him get promotion? Do you want to see Leeds United back up with a massive club team?
Yeah, you know, I have a couple of mates here as well, so... Personally, I would, you know, like them to do well, but Leeds are it'd be great to have them back in the Premier League.
Have you spoke to him about Bielsa, Trev?
No, not really.
No,
no.
Chance, no.
You know what it's like? Well, you don't really sort of.
You don't care, then.
No, not really. It's more about his night out at the weekend.
The coaches and stuff like your Pochettinos and others. I mean, they all rave about him. Anybody that's worked for him say that he's different class, but. If he doesn't take Leeds up, he'll probably get the bump.
But he just walked out his last job as well, didn't he? I think he's a bit of a wild card. I think the media that were on him in France or something, he just offered enough for this and just left. But the football they're playing. That's what I'm saying, the wee boy Forshaw played against him down south, and you'd never think he'd be able to play the way he's playing now under Bielsa. So it just shows you how big an impact a coach or a manager can have on players.
Who do you fancy getting out of here? You've got Norwich, you've got Leeds, you've got Middlesbrough, you've got Martin O'Neill taking over at Nottingham Forest. You know, there's a few teams in the mix there.
Yeah, I think Leeds will go up automatic. Yeah, Norwich as well, they're nicking late goals, and that's sort of habit, because it's sort of epitomises the team that goes up at the end of the season. You know, it's no coincidence, and I think them two will be the strongest. And then
clubs as well, aren't they?
Yeah, massive clubs.
Derby as well. Lampard's got them.
Still think Middlesbrough have a strong squad, and they're sort of hovering about playoffs.
Wee Tony will kick his way to the Premiership, won't he?
No, but the fans are.
Well, he has to get them up because
the fans are disgruntled.
He needs to get them up. He lost to Villa. Right. In the playoff semi-final last season, Tony Pearson. So this is his
last chance.
This is his last chance. We'll keep a wee eye on that, see how it goes. Right, we've got the main man sitting beside us.
Let's hear a bit about the old career, eh?
Let's get into it. So, Motherwell, Hartlepool to Motherwell. Trevor, how much have you enjoyed your time? And just when the initial news came to you about the possibility of coming up to Scotland and playing, were you up for it, or did you have a wee bit of doubt?
I was in the end pushing it, but at the start it was, you know, with my family situation as well. My daughter was down in Newcastle, and you know, with my ex partner, and coming up, I was sort of settled. I was in my comfort zone down there. And whenever Motherwell came in, Hartlepool sort of brought me in and offered me a lot more money than what I was getting offered at Motherwell. So for a week or two, I think I was sort of, I was actually driving in to sign the contract and with the new manager, Craig Harrison. And I just got something come over me, a change of heart. And in the end, I was ringing because they were stalling. I think it was over $2,500 or something, like transfer fee, like both. Honestly, I think they bought me for about $4,000 or something. And I think Hartlepool wanted $5,000, but Motherwell were like. So in the end, I rang our gaffer, Robbo, and said, like, you know, I'm desperate to come, like, make it happen. I've got a feeling about it. And, you know, it sort of surpassed my expectations the first year, getting to two cup finals. And, you know, with hindsight, it was definitely the right move, and I'm glad I done it.
And do you know him before, Stephen Robinson?
I worked with him in a couple of squads. We went on a end of season tour in Northern Ireland to Chile and Uruguay, and he was the assistant manager then. And, you know, but I hadn't spoken to him for a couple of years when he first contacted me. And, you know, but it dragged on for 3 or 4 weeks, and I was coming, I wasn't coming. And, you know, just to get over it, it was me actually in the end was sort of desperate, you know, to. For it to happen. So I sort of pushed and sort of said to the manager, like, trust me, I'll, you know, it's only a couple of grand, like, dig deep, like, make it happen. And, you know, thankful that he did.
Simon's just got a look of disgust in his face when you say that I took less money to sign for money. I'm not back for it. And he's like, no, never.
The contract Hartlepool offered me was to stay. It was a 3-year deal. They put me in through my license with the thing. The money was a lot more. And within the 3 years, it was in the contract that they would have me on the coaching staff. So it was like,
you're off your nut.
I know, but I can't. But my family's down. Like, I moved, obviously started at Sumner, and I was based in the northeast, and it's like a second home to me. Yeah. So like that sort of side of it was pulled. I was like, but my missus was on to me as well, saying, you know, it's an opportunity to go up there and do well. And, you know, I'm glad with hindsight it's the best decision I've ever made, but at the time it wasn't straightforward. It wasn't, you know, Hartlepool were in a conference at the time as well. It was like massive step. Well, it should have been a no-brainer really, but it wasn't at the time. But now I'm glad I've done it.
It was part of it, because they say that, but a lot of boys, you know, and guys like Louis Moulton that have been adverts and saying, you'll come to clubs like Motherwell, you can showcase yourself and it leads to bigger and better things. Was that part of your thinking as well? You know, live on the telly, you know, half a dozen times a season, Ibrox, Parkhead, potentially Hampden, etc, etc.
Yeah, of course, you know, no disrespect to the League 2, but when you go from playing at places like Dagenham, Barnet, and then you've got the chance to maybe go to Ibrox or Celtic Park and play, you know, that was a massive pull for me. And you know, I grew up watching, you know, if you're from Northern Ireland, you're either a Rangers Celtic fan, you grew up watching the SPL, watching Old Firm games, and, you know, it was definitely a massive pull. So, you know, I think it should have been a no-brainer at the time, but, you know, now I've done it, it's the best thing I've ever done, but at the time, it wasn't as straightforward as that. But, you know, I'm glad I've done it. I've had some amazing experiences playing here 3 or 4 times, and, you know, it's been great.
Well, obviously, your best experience was the 3 months at Fratton Park, we say.
By the way, Trev kept us in the league.
No, I did.
You did. You were good that year. Maybe we were.
I was good and got absolutely. Shafted me massively. Like,
what's with it?
Massively.
Great club for me, isn't it?
Unbelievable. The stadium, the fans. It's a proper club, like. But yeah, they promised me. I remember Andy Offord was a gaffer.
Andy Offord called us in.
I think it was the day before the last game of the season. Called us in, like, you know, go away. I was getting married in the summer. He's like, go away, you know, enjoy your wedding. We'll be in contact. There's like a 2-year deal here waiting for you. I was thinking, great. I still haven't heard from him.
And did he stay the manager?
He stayed the gaffer. Yeah. He had been. So.
Before he came, the guy had, instead of to, he used to sew his hands on at 5 to 3.
What a life.
What was his name?
So big John Sullivan. Lovely guy.
John Sullivan.
Living in Vegas now.
He's an American now. He's like, what do you call him? Like,
sells his accent or not?
Oh, it's embarrassing.
He sells real estate.
Aye, but
John Sullivan, he was a writer of Only Fools and Horses.
Was it?
Aye, that's right.
I think he was standing at the But what a place. I love Portsmouth.
It was brilliant. Good place to live. And yeah, it was lovely.
Just got drunk all the time, man.
That's why you say that the fans are really passionate about their club there.
But the worst thing was, like, I would play well on a Saturday. I would get the paper on a Sunday and there'd be like 12 page spread out in Portsmouth. You know, obviously 2 or 3 years have been. So it would give me like a rating in the paper, 6 out of 10. You know, fans would be writing him, you know, he's good, solid keeper, but he's not not David James. And I'm thinking, hold on a minute here, I'm in frigging 800 quid a week. David James is on 70 grand a week. Like, so I think that sort of, I think our era there, we struggled with that, being compared. Because two or three
the
Milan
Mandarich, Harry Redknapp,
you know. Yeah, but it was only 2 or 3 years before that they were playing cup, winning the cup, you know what I mean? And for fans to go from that and then watching us every week.
Well, you think they had, what, Canu, David James,
Defoe, Peter Crouch.
Crouch.
Mendes.
Who was a big, who was a big centre-half? Sol Campbell, Distan.
Their faces are plastered all over front.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Sai hopping out with half a
Oh, what a place, man.
So you mentioned the North East as well. You started early days at Sunderland. Roy Keane, your gaffer.
Aye, Keane came in after... Who did he come in
after? Ricky Spraggett? No, Ricky took over from him.
I think it was Niall Quinn. Niall Quinn and this consortium took over Ireland, and I think Quinn ended up sacking himself after 4 games, so he didn't get off the stinker, him and Bobby Saxon. And, you know, I remember he came out in the press, said, you know, we've bringing this world-class manager in, you know, there was a buzz around the place, but when they announced Roy Keane, everyone was saying, you know, how's he a world-class manager? He's sort of, but in the space of a year, he took us from the bottom of the championship, won the league, you know, in his first year, and for me, it was unbelievable, you know, it was just, there's not many footballers who give you that, you know, you get starstruck by, but Roy Keane, and when you see him, he's just sort of, he just gains his respect as soon as he walks in the room. He's unbelievable.
Because, as you say, no experience as a manager, but because of what he achieved as that's a player, was it instant? He's, I'll run through a brick wall for this guy.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, people talk about him being ruthless, but he says it how it is. You know where you stand with him. And for me, I've got nothing but, you know, happy memories with me. He was brilliant with me. And, you know, I remember playing this small side of game with him one time, and he always joined in training. He was always the best player. He was unbelievable. But, you know, before a game kicks off, a little five, you're passing the ball, and he was passing it to me, and he was just like, just think one day you can tell your kids you played with the greatest. I was thinking, you know what, that's probably true, but I used to hate being this team because he was like, I remember I gave the ball to one player, and it was an Irish player, young, I'll not name his name, but I give it to him, he was one of them touch tackle players, and you know, lo and behold, his first touch tackle, give it away, Keane turned around to me, he goes, oh, you fucking know your players, don't be passing him the ball again. I don't know what to think, like, but,
that's brilliant,
you know, he's ruthless, and but you know, Berlin for me, he's done a great job at Sunderland. I think he was hard done by in the end.
I remember reading his book, and there was a bit in it about he spoke about the goalkeepers at Sunderland, and there was one time it was in a summer training camp in Portugal, and he said he was horrible the way he treated him. Craig Gordon was there at the time, he had to go and apologise, but you just got the feeling that reading his stuff that he wasn't appreciative of goalkeepers in terms of the importance that they had in a team.
No,
would that be fair?
It probably is, but I think it's more, you know, when you criticise a goalkeeper, it's more scrutinised because it's a low in position, isn't it? But he was hard on everyone, you know. Mm-hmm. I can't remember him being overly hard, and you know, Craig was unbelievable for him when he came in. Craig's the best keeper I've ever worked with, you know, he's unbelievable. But I just think, I can't remember him being, I think he was more hard on, you know, Martin Fulop, who was a Hungarian goalkeeper, he's not with us anymore. And you know, I think he was more hard on Big Martin. I remember one game where he said to Martin at half time, we were playing Northampton in the cup, and he kept rolling it out to Aaron Nosworthy, and Nugsy kept giving it away. And Keane said to him at half time, I said, see if you roll the ball out one more time, I'm bringing you straight off. Look, minute into the second half, Big Martin comes for a cross, gets the ball, rolls it out to Nugsy kicks it into the stand. Keane's, you just look at Roy Keane, he's just standing there thinking, like, what do you do? But, you know, I can't remember him being, he was tough, he was so tough, but he was tough with everyone, you know, like.
It's standards, didn't he? He wanted people to meet these standards, didn't he?
Massive, like, and, you know, I remember we played a Resi game at Gateshead, and we got beat 2-0 or something, but a few of the first team boys, Graham Kavanagh was playing, big Stan Varga was playing, so we played Gateshead, got beat 2-0, we were hopeless, but his assistant was at the game, so we had all drove the cars to the thing, we're thinking get off, and Neil Bailey, the manager, came in, he was like, lads, there's a bus coming to pick us up now to take us back to the training ground, the manager wants to speak, so we went back to the training ground, this is a Saturday night, like, sat there for an hour and a half. I remember we sat in the room still. Next thing, Keane walks in. So obviously he'd been at home or something. spoke to Lockwood, his assistant. Lockwood said that we're shambles. Keane come in. We're in this meeting for him and Graham Kavanagh had to be dragged apart because he put it on Cav because he was the experienced senior guy. Oh, yeah. And Cav's a big character as well. And, you know, and they were going at it. But, you know, it just shows you how what he's like. You know, he'd obviously travelled. He'd probably down Manchester or something. He'd travelled up just to, you know, keep us in the room for 2 hours and tell us it's not acceptable. And, you know, you knew where you stood with him. Like, he was...
I love that. I know
it is. It is, like, it's ruthless, but it's brilliant. You know, he gets respect. And
do you think modern day players can't do that with them now, can you?
Nah, not big players and big money, mate. Like, players like me who were trying to make a living, I would have ran through a brick wall for him, you know, because I was desperate to make it in the game and desperate to please him. But boys who are going back to their mansions and big contracts and big, you know, they were probably just thought, you know what, it's not worth it.
I'm just going to
down tools, aye. So,
as you say, he was successful at Sunderland the past 3 or 4 years. He's been assistant to Martin O'Neill at Republic Island. Martin O'Neill wants him beside him at Nottingham Forest as well. From your own experience with him, Trevor, can you see why he would be an asset as a number two, or do you think he should become a manager again and be his own man?
I think I worked with Martin O'Neill as well, and you know, Martin O'Neill is a great manager, but he doesn't have that ruthless streak that Roy Keane does, and I think they must work great together because Martin O'Neill is such an experienced guy. He wouldn't be constantly bringing Roy Keane with him if he thought, you know, he wasn't good for him. So, you know, I think they'll work well together. I think Martin O'Neill's maybe going to be, what, maybe 5-10 years left in management, so Keane's still early in terms of being a manager, and he's thinking, you know, I need to learn my trade again, and I think it's probably the best thing for him at the minute.
You mentioned, just to go back to something, I wonder if there's a comparison up Pearce in terms of, you know, Roy Keane hadn't achieved anything as a manager when he went in his first job, but had a world-class reputation as a footballer. Can you see then why it's at the moment it's going so well for Rangers in terms of Steven Gerrard, a very similar scenario?
Yeah, again, with Gerrard, I can imagine the impact he's had at Rangers. As soon as he walked in the door, he's already gained respect, you know, for what he's done in the game as a player. And, you know, I know personally, if he came to Motherwell as a manager, straight away, regardless of him being his first job in football, you know, you would automatically think this guy's, you know, the real deal. And, you know, he's had a great impact up here, you know, but he's been backed as well, which has helped him, you know, by the board, and, you know, and he's brought in some good signing. So it's no surprise to me what, you know, what impact he's had at Rangers.
You mentioned one of your last game for Motherwell was a 7-0 at Ibrox, and yet you had 7-1. Success. 7-1, sorry.
That was one of your better games,
isn't it? Yeah, it actually was.
Should have been 12. You had, but one of your finest moments as part of a team was out there at Hampden when you beat the Rangers in the League Cup semi final. How much did you enjoy that and get on to the two cup finals last season?
Yeah, that was amazing. Like, for me, that was the first time. You know, we played Rangers. We hadn't played Celtic up to then, but we played Rangers at home. So we hadn't played in any of the big stadiums. And, you know, I've played most of my career in lower leagues in England. But, you know, to come to Hampden, full house, and to actually beat them, you know, it was surreal. You know, the atmosphere in the dressing room after was like, it didn't sink in, you know, what we'd actually done. And, you know, as I say, for someone like me who's flittered around the lower leagues for years and to come up, beat Rangers at Hampden in the semi-final of the Cup, it was, you know, it was amazing. And you know, I wish, you know, you wish you could bottle them feelings up in football, because it's hard, you can't explain how, you know, the euphoria you've got, it's unbelievable.
You got going mad in the dressing room after it?
Going mental, mate, yeah, mental. But it was a Sunday, actually, and all the boys went out, but I had my daughter, and my routine on Sundays, take her home.
Kids ruin everything,
as much as I love her. And, but that's how I spent my Sunday night after beating Rangers, mate, going down the M74, staying in a little Novotel down in Newcastle. Like, just, but again, it was like, sometimes that's the best way, you know, just to sit and lie on take your own and take it all in. It was,
see, that day, that semi-final, Louis Moult got a lot of the praise, rightly so, for his goals, but... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I imagine this. Did you know of a right good save, or did Rangers miss a sitter or something?
They missed a couple. I had no real outstanding saves that game. I had a couple where they were one-on-ones, but more bad finishes right at me. But, you know, as a keeper, them games were just solid. You know, solid 6-7 out of 10. They're the best games for me. You know, you don't have to be pulling off. You know, everything I'd done was solid kicking. I just, you know, I felt it. Perfect game for me, where just done everything clean. You know, that's what you want as a keeper. You know, you're not flapping at things, and So for me, it was just an all-round perfect day, clean sheet, and it couldn't have went any better.
We had Louis Mote on the programme with Simon doing his sit-down, and he mentioned that a bit of the motivation was some of the media outlets were already advertised as an Old Firm final. Did you pick up on that as well?
I think there was rumours of it going about that a tweet had went out or something where they were already advertised. I think it was might have been like hospitality or something, boxes for the cup final, Rangers and Celtic. But I think it sort of got blown out of proportion. And
did, you booked one, did you book one of the Rangers boxes?
No, my dad. But, you know, I think Multi was, it was definitely talked about. It was used as a incentive, you know, it definitely was. But, you know, for me, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. You know, it was just, I think, maybe being blown out of proportion for me. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to round off, a couple of minutes to go. This time last year, January transfer window, Brendan Rodgers wants to take you to Celtic. Just give us a bit of the background to it.
It all happened quickly. I think Gordon had got injured on the Saturday, but the window had shut on the Wednesday, and we had a game on the Tuesday night against Hibs, so everything happened so quick. But, you know, I think it was the Monday at training I first heard about it. Hinchy, our goalie coach, had told me he's good pals with Stevie Woods at Celtic, and he'd said, listen, Celtic are coming in with a bid for you. And I was like, you know what, this is surreal. You know, I'd just come, like, Motherwell were haggling over $2,000 for, you know, they were going to cancel a deal over $1,000 or two, you know, 6 months earlier, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, one of the biggest teams in Europe coming in for you. It was surreal. But I think from the offset, the manager sort of made it clear to me that it wasn't going to happen because it was so close to the window. He didn't have a replacement. So I never got, you know, carried away. And
do you never say him to?
I did, mate. I had conversation. I was like, gaffer, like,
change your life.
It could change my life, set me up for life. And, you know, and he was like, yeah, but I could be sacked in 3 weeks. So if I let you go and, you know,
change my life as well.
Yeah, exactly. So you can understand it from both point of views. And, you know, I never went kicking his door down. And it was one, you know, I was obviously disappointed. And, you know, I grew up in Northern Ireland, you're either a Rangers Celtic fan. I grew up in a Rangers family. So, you know, a lot of my mates back home are big Rangers fans, a lot of them Celtic fans. So it was like that side of it, the gaffer was saying to me, you know, it's not the right move for you, you know. And I was like, but football's one link, these opportunities, he was saying, you know, it'll happen again, other clubs will be in for you in the summer. And I was like, nothing's guaranteed in football, you know what I mean? This opportunity, you know, a club like Celtic coming in for you is amazing. And
because I think, would you think, Charity, there's the financial impact where you'd imagine you're going to get a right good bump up in your salary, and B, I'd imagine that some people would say, oh, but why do you want to go there to be a number two to Craig Gordon? But I would imagine that you would think, aye, okay, but I actually believe I can go there and be number one.
Yeah, there was that side of it. And, you know, with hindsight as well, I didn't have an international cap. My hindsight now, I've continued to play at Motherwell. I've got 5 caps now. Would that have happened, you know, with the form Craig's been in since he came back? Probably not, because you look at Scott Bain, every time he's played, he's been outstanding. Yeah. And still, he's probably only played a handful of games, you know. So, you know, with that side of it, but at the end of the day, you're here, I'm here, I'm a dad of 2 kids, you know, I want to give them the best life possible. And you know how it works in football. My agent had already spoke to them. I know what sort of money it was. It was, you know, it was life changing for me. It's money I've played mostly League 1, League 2. I haven't earned, you know, I don't have a lot to show for my career, you know, 15 years. So, you know, it comes a point where you think, you know, I've got to set my family up here. And so that side of it was definitely a big factor in terms
of. So, how did Stevie Robinson react then when you had him pinned up against the wall?
Showed him your bank balance.
And did he take it well?
He understood, and there was a point where he accepted that, you know, it was going to happen. So he lined another keeper up. It was a guy, Freddie Woodman.
Is it Newcastle? Is it?
So on that Tuesday, we were playing Hibs. He had lined it up that. And Freddie had actually agreed to come to Motherwell. He was on the way up. So at that point, Motherwell wanted Celtic to go to this amount. Celtic said, yes, we'll do it. So it was all happening. Like,
you thought about $300,000-$400,000 transfer fee?
Yeah, I think it was. And the day of the Hibs game, it was actually going to happen. There was about an hour or two. I was over at David Lloyd with my agent. We were just sitting waiting for the call to go to Celtic to do the medical. And so at that point, we thought it was happening. And all of a sudden, Aberdeen have come in for Woodman. Joe Lewis got injured, didn't he? Oh, so that there, little things like that, you know, the whole thing was cancelled, and then the Scott Bain turned up in his Hibs tracksuit, and you know,
I hope it's Scott weed you in, yeah, Scott.
No, definitely not, mate. He's I'm living in a mid-tours. I'm moving into mid-tours, and he's moving into his mansion. It's depressing, but you know,
you'll get there, mate. You'll get there. Don't worry.
But everything happens for a reason, you know. Motherwell have been great with me, and I love the club. You know, it's brilliant, and you know, hindsight, I've made five appearances for Northern Ireland now, and who's to say that would have happened? So, on that side, you got to. Take every little positive you can.
And you wouldn't have been on this podcast if you'd signed for Celtic, mate. So
no, I'd have been on a bigger one.
Oh, fucking delete that now.
Sitting with Peter Crouch in it, anyway. Anyway, listen, the most important things we said right at the top of the show is your health. And when May 25th comes around, Trevor, I hope we get the news that you deserve, that you can get your career back in track and get back to living a normal life professionally as well. So we hope that works out for you. And for Simon, how good's it been having your old Portsmouth teammate?
Great to see him
for the last 50 minutes.
Top keeper, by the way, Portsmouth top keeper. I think he'll go bigger, definitely.
Well, listen, we certainly hope so. We wish Trevor all the best from everybody at the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground. I hope you've enjoyed the last 50 minutes. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're just now going to nip outside and reenact that Christmas night out when Trevor punches fuck out of Simon. We'll see you all next week, and we'll be with Paul Slane and Kevin Kyle. Have a good weekend. Cheers.